Shame to the cheaters. Shame to the recording hero. Shame, shame on Michigan Stallions and the rest. Shame to the cheaters. Shame to the recording hero. Shame, shame on Michigan Stallions and the rest. Our honor defend, we will fight to the end for Ohio.
All right, Franchise Fantasy Podcast, we're back after a week hiatus. Long-awaited showdown here. We've kind of awoken humanity. Connor Stallions versus the Buckeyes is the new topic in college football. Let's start with Corman. Where are we at right now on this? How bad do you want the NCAA to come down on them?
It's real. Frankly, it pains me. It's disappointing to see such a pillar of the Big Ten, of the conference, as a Big Ten guy. It kind of, yeah, these last 2 years, it hurt to lose to Michigan. But we were 17-2 over the previous 19 matchups. So it kind of felt good that the conference, because, you know, in bowl season, a lot of times I've rooted for Michigan in their bowl games. Unlike my dad, I root Big Ten right in the bowl games. And so for finally another team to kind of step up and help the conference out, and it wasn't, because up to this point, it had been just the Buckeyes, only team that was getting wins in the college football playoff, only team that had been to the title game to beat an SEC team, to beat Clemson, and then to find out.
Good for the conference. They're the topic on the Feinbaum show.
But to find out that it was all a lie, that the only reason they were winning was because of it's not sign stealing. It's the illegal in-person scouting and video recording that allows you to have the time, energy, effort, resources to break down not just the signals, but all of the play calls and the indicator signs, which is the key to the sign stealing. And that you don't have, even if you kind of know there might be some sign stealing, I don't think that anyone understood the depth, the depravity that this university and this coaching staff was willing to go to steal these signs. And it wasn't until, and TCU at least having multiple weeks to prepare with the bowl game after, I think they had a little more intel, and then they had a good system going where they actually kept their own signs. So it really allowed them to fool Michigan, that Michigan really thought, okay, we don't have as good of a sign stealing. TCU kind of surprised us. They're the one team we didn't scout hard. I mean, Stallions had been to 30 games, 4 tickets a game, spending upwards of $30,000, $40,000 for this lowly staffer to be attending these games, where he actually wasn't always attending. He had his little birds out at the game. And, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. You have, without Stallions, Michigan, J.J. McCarthy, and whoever the other guy was that transferred, I forget his name, very forgettable player.
McNamara.
He's under, Michigan was averaging passes under pressure, dropbacks under pressure 12 times per game with Stallions, knowing the play calls only 6 times a game.
Okay, but those are quarterbacks, so what they're stealing. Without,
yeah, they're still
linebackers blitzing, like that matters?
Yeah, blocking, you know, protections.
I just want to say, Corman, like, you know, first of all, long-time listener, third-time caller, I think. So thank you. Thank you, friends, for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast. I've been waiting for this day. Corbin, I want to give you like some props for the preparation of like first and foremost bringing up our bowl record. The bowl record for Michigan, not good. I do not think that is because of sign stealing in any way, shape, or form. Our bowl record is just terrible because we're Michigan and we are the number one reason why people watch college football, and we get put in all the biggest games. So like we're going to get put against teams that are better than us because, you know, we bring in the numbers. Hand up, we are extremely popular for college. Everyone wants to talk about it.
You have evidence that viewership
Michigan right now could not be more exciting for ESPN, for Fox, for anyone in college football. They want to talk about Big Blue because you know what? Like, we are the biggest thing happening right now. So thank you very much for like at least owning up to that about like why this is happening.
I think you're a top five draw. I think the numbers clearly show OSU draws the most eyeballs.
So let's go with number two here. Okay. Do you agree that sign stealing is legal in college football?
In the sign stealing?
Yes or no answer. In-game sign stealing, is it legal in college football?
Live at the game that you are playing in.
So yes.
Yeah, it's legal.
In game. Okay. In game.
In game, yes. So we're all in agreement. In game sign stealing. Okay. Do you agree that college football, multi-billion-dollar industry, coaches are paid tens of millions of dollars, that they will try to find every advantage possible for their team? Do you agree, yes or no?
Sure.
Yeah.
Whether it's a cheeseburger or...
Yeah. Yes, 100%. Yes, they will try to find any angle possible for their team to be successful. Now, if it was as simple to keep teams from stealing your signs, would you not just put your plays on a wristband and change up the numbers every single week if it was a meaningful difference in the game? A
lot of moving parts.
Think in all the hundreds of games played every single week, that coaches would not say, there's a chance this week that someone's going to pick up my signs in the second half, and I don't want to give them that advantage. Would you not put your plays on a wristband and go from there?
Yeah.
And now would you tell me that for the biggest game of the season, Michigan, Ohio State, that Ohio State's going to say, I'm going to take the same plays that I've been calling all season long on the sidelines in a public event, in front of hundreds of thousands of people on TV, and they're going to say, you know what? I'm comfortable keeping those the exact same.
I don't think they kept them the exact same, but they kept them in the same language. And when you have a trained code breaker like Connor Stallions, able to break down all of their symbols, look, the wristband can only hold so much. And there's a lot of information. There's a lot of different coaches talking to different players on the field.
A college student can keep more than 300 plays in their head.
No, that's why there's multiple position groups receiving multiple signals.
300 plays. Do we think that a college student, these college athletes, are going to keep more than 300 signs, combinations, touching their head, touching whatever it is, signs in their head at any one
time? If it's so easy to just do it in the game, then why invest the resources? Why invest the money, the time? Why have this lowly staffer with an enormous notebook right behind your coordinators? I've never seen a recruiting coordinator in your offensive and defense. When the offense is on the field, he's in their ear. When the defense is on the field, he's in their ear.
I'm not at Connor Stallions yet. I'm just asking. If it was that big of an advantage for any football team, why would they continue to put their signs in public display on big billboards for everyone to see? If it actually mattered,
so stupid, that much, the whole thing.
But they do, because
it doesn't matter competitively at all.
Oh, it does. It matters. It matters. It matters bigly. And
then Corman, like, here's a question for you: like, would you fire Day for having advanced knowledge of knowing that Michigan stole your signs?
He didn't know the depth.
Not in game. Like, you're saying TCU was so smart that they were able to use their signs to outsmart Michigan. That's your claim. Would you say that Day is so dumb he couldn't even figure out, like, having the...
No, they had TCU. TCU had enough time.
Able to win that game?
TCU had enough time to re-implement.
So you think, when did Ohio State know that their signs were stolen? Because they claim, their coaches claim they knew and they changed their signs ahead of the game. So, like...
I don't think they changed them enough. I don't think they truly understood.
We'll get to the Michigan stuff later. Should you fire Day for not being able to take enough advantage of this massive? Like, if you think Michigan has such an advantage of knowing the plays in advance, how could Ohio State not have an equal advantage of knowing that Michigan knows their plays in advance?
Why is the onus is not on the team that is not cheating to have to take time out of their schedule and out of their mental preparation to relearn a whole language of signs and plays? Like, it's not on us to work around the cheaters.
We're not on penalties yet. We're not talking about who's on what. I'm just talking about, is Day inept to not be able to take advantage of this and still get absolutely smoked knowing that Michigan knows your signs and having time to prep to change it? Like, that is a question in itself. I think Day is a terrible coach. I think he is absolutely fearful of how dominant Michigan has been over Ohio State
in two years.
Yeah, no, but like, dominant, would you agree?
No.
And by the way, also another thing, by the way, if you look at the first half scoring in those two games, pretty close. If you look at the second half scoring in those games, not close. That's what happens when you get physically dominated. It does not happen when the team knows your signs the whole game, because we would have beat you from the beginning.
I think Day happening at the line of scrimmage. We can talk about Day's play calling in the Michigan game last year. I think Michigan caught him off guard in 20. Michigan caught them
passing on fourth and one.
Michigan caught OSU off guard in 2021 after. Michigan skirted the game. 2021, OSU got bullied in that game. Then in 2022,
Michigan catch OSU off guard in 2021. We ran it down your throats. We only passed the ball four times the entire second half.
Yeah,
we ran it down your throats. We could have told you the play, and you would never have been able to stop.
The team was not ready to play in 2021, but in 2022, I think Ryan Day allowed OSU to deviate from what their strengths were to try and prove a point.
What was their strengths in 2022?
Spreading the ball out and using CJ Stroud's arm and all of those weapons around him to have explosive plays and drives that are taking a minute 30 off the clock.
I mean, that's because Michigan didn't allow it. It wasn't a Ryan Day play call thing. It was that Michigan did not allow the big play. That's what we do all season long. That's the boa constrictor that Michigan is. Like, we make you drive it all the way down the field. We don't allow explosives. But you guys went the opposite approach. You said, we're going to blitz our safeties on every single play, and you're going to allow explosives. And we did four explosives in that game.
The problem is when you know the blitz is coming, it allows for the explosives. Because OSU was
– every single play. It was like you allowed no safety to be back every single play. There was nothing about that was secretive. That was your strategy, stop the run. And you guys got burned on stopping the run.
No,
this is not about knowing signs in advance. This is about
you can see Stallions in the D coordinator and in the O coordinator's ear, and immediately he whispers something and the Michigan sideline begins signaling and changing up their plays.
They knew what was coming. Did you watch high school football, Steve?
I was on the sideline this year. It's too fast of a game for any of that to really matter.
The high school kids are looking.
Am I debating? Is this a moderator or is this a moderator? Or is this a 2-on-1 debate here?
Well, I think this whole thing's stupid. But Connor, he's going to get to Connor Stallions. Connor Stallions is an insane person, but
yes.
And I think he's going to get there. But the debate of these signs, it's not why you won or lost games. It's too fast of a game on that sideline.
Then why do it? Why invest the resources as an organization?
Because there's too many coaches on that sideline. They're all bored. Ohio State's got some guys that have been doing the same thing, trying to, in their trying to impress Day to move up and whatever, you know.
I think the why do you do it point is exactly the thing that I was saying earlier, right? Like, it's a billion-dollar industry. You're looking for any advantage, right?
Yeah. So
like, now, the why do you call it on an armband versus, like, doing signs to the field? Because, like, looking for moderate things here and there that give you an edge.
We can all agree that they need to have the radios in the helmets.
Okay, yeah, but like the thing is, like, I hear people saying this is a 21-point advantage for Michigan. Let's say that was true. We don't lose any games this year. Like, we don't lose to Ohio State last year if it's a 21-point advantage. It doesn't.
Games play out differently. OSU was early in the game last year. OSU was a few plays away. A really nice JJ McCarthy throw in the face of a blitz on third and long away from the steamroller starting.
You scored 3 points in the entire second half.
Yeah, but it would have been
close.
It would have. OSU was a momentum team, and it would have been different. I mean, look, Georgia was way more talented offensively and defensively, and OSU didn't have major problems with them. They went toe-to-toe and lost on a last-second missed field goal. It's just when Michigan knows when you're going to blitz, when Michigan knows when you're going to pass first run, it's a lot easier to stop. They steal signs.
You have no other choice than to take that opinion. I get that.
They like, steal the proof is in the pre and the post stallion stats. Michigan 69.
That's the answer. Michigan found a quarterback. That's all.
Michigan found a quarterback. The COVID year doesn't count. 2019, we had like absolutely. 2019, 2018, we had no quarterbacks.
Harbaugh was on his way out. He was getting desperate. 69 and 24, 33.6 points a game, 17.6 points versus 40.5 and 28.1.
I mean, like, if you're comparing 2019 versus 2021 season in college football, what are we even doing? Like, it's not the NFL. These teams change over so much. You can't compare 2 years.
Oh, it's very comparable.
It is not.
You look at the entire Harbaugh tenure and how all of the sudden, the second they get Stallions and his operation changes.
As soon as Ohio State brings in Brian Day, Ohio State becomes an absolute like shit show on the line of scrimmage. They are not.
Ryan Day beat Michigan 56-27.
In the COVID year.
No, because Michigan skirted OSU in the COVID year with fake COVID. Ryan Day is his first year, 56-27, and then should have beat Clemson if that fumble wasn't overturned and ruled an incomplete pass. And then the next year, they only had six games, but they beat Clemson.
Urban Meyer year. Would you agree that 2019 was actually an Urban Meyer year?
No, because Ryan Day was the head coach calling the plays, and Ryan Day had been offensive coordinator the year before. There was continuity. He even had coached 3 games when Urban was suspended.
An actual scandal, right? The levels of things that happen in college football, the thing that we're talking about, sign stealing that everyone does versus like Urban Meyer covering up for someone's domestic abuse. Like, these are not even on the same scale of things. And so the fact that we're like actually
one has nothing to do with the play. One has nothing to do with the play on the field.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of stuff that Ohio State has done that actually like changes the play on the field, the paying players. I'm like, that's like a very well-known
thing. Paying players. What? There's no evidence in football that they were paying players. There's hearsay about college basketball and Thad Matta. Unless you're counting the little tattoos for gold pants things with Terrell Pryor and Jim Tressel not bringing it to the NCAA's attention, then there's no evidence. And I don't know, maybe it was Orlando Pace, was Katzenmoyer paid? I don't know. Maybe he just didn't have to go to class or whatever. But that's ages ago. We're talking right now. There's been no evidence of OSU paying players. That's just a total straw man and trying to change the subject.
I mean, Jim, forget about Ohio State. Jim Tressel paid players at Youngstown State. So, I mean, I'm sure he did it at Ohio State if he did it at Youngstown State. Okay, let's move on. We could, you could debate the whether it gave them an advantage or not. I think it's stupid. We need helmet radios. We know that. But let's hear. I want to hear Ekmanis' take on this Connor Stallions character because he is kind of crazy.
So listen, Connor Stallions. First of all, I think I want to salute the military. I think the way that the military's been treated in all of this, of like he has special ops and everything, and therefore he has secret time sealing skills. Let's salute the military. Let's thank him for his service first and foremost.
Yeah,
thank you for his service. Now, this is a young kid. He's trying to make his way in the game. Okay, he is trying to get in the ear of Jim Harbaugh. He is trying to make an impression on the team.
Yep.
There is zero chance that this is a high orchestrated event from Michigan Athletics paying tens of thousands of dollars to this kid to create tickets. And like, there's going to be a money trail on this thing. No, this is a kid trying to make a name for himself. He's the designated sign stealer on the team. Every like team in the Big Ten has one. It is not.
Who was paying for the tickets? $40,000 worth of tickets.
He has very wealthy parents. He has very wealthy parents. His parents bought him a house. He rented that house out as an Airbnb. He had side hustles. He was making money.
$40,000 worth of tickets to go watch Purdue in Iowa?
The number of $40,000, I haven't seen actually concrete anywhere. It's an estimate of how much it could cost to travel and go to these games. So, like, the $40,000 number is not actually fact. So, like, let's not bring in non-fact.
Four tickets, 30 games, $100 a ticket for those seats.
I think our quote-unquote vast network was just one person who's going to games in these – and, like, he flipped the tickets. Sure, he flipped the tickets. But these are local people going to games and just taking video on an iPhone and, like, scanning in on an iPhone trying to get signed. I mean, we're not talking about high-tech stuff here. We're not talking about like steady cams in the stadium zeroed in on coaches. We're talking about a person.
iPhone Max has iPhones have pretty good iPhones have pretty good video.
Corbin,
we've got to ban iPhones from stadiums now.
I mean, like there is way better footage of these coaches doing stuff.
The all 22 intentionally cuts out and comes from behind the sideline, so you can't get a clear view of these plays.
If you hear any of the coaches talking about this in the media, they're saying you get enough of what you need from like live TV, let alone like do you get it from the all 22.
That's what OSU was prepared for. They didn't realize the levels of information that Michigan had. Binders full of information.
Binders full of shaky iPhone video of what people had already saw on national television, which, by the way, Corbin, if you're talking about the 3rd and 4 play that everyone's talking about at the Ohio State game where it was like inside their own 10, they threw for a touchdown. One, they scored a touchdown on that play. Two, no kidding that they were going to pass on that play. It was an obvious passing down. The fact that the team was pointing at pass, the most obvious thing.
That was
because you guys can't run the football.
That was first quarter, early in the field.
You look at tendencies. You do not look at like, there's like Steve was saying, there is not enough time to process the 4 signal callers on the field of who's hot and who's not. And actually,
if you truly know their signals, if there's enough time for the players on the field to make their adjustments when the coaches put in a sign, there's enough time for the opposing spy that knows all of their plays. He knows the signals as well, the signals, the tells, as well as the OSU players, because his whole job was to haul himself up in a room and study these hours and hours of video that his birds had collected.
College and NFL defenses are not that complex. Like, and even the offenses in college are not. Like, this linebacker's blitzing, still got to make a play. Like,
but it's easier to make a small adjustment if you know a guy's blitzing and call the right play.
But like, what was the when this video that you're referring to? We called pass. It was 3rd and 4 in the 10. You're going to pass. We knew that, but everyone in the stadium knew that. They're not saying there's a safety blitz or whatever. There's like, this is the route. They're not
yelling pass.
All these specific things. They're calling out pass, which everyone in the world knew you were going to pass. And then you scored a touchdown on that play. So like the video evidence of Connor Stallions whispering in the ear of the defensive coordinators is just like,
there's more than that one play. Look at them being so ready for an insane James Franklin fake field goal, perfectly positioned. No chance they would ever expect that to happen and be fake, positioned fake like that.
Goals, if you watch old film tape, you can usually figure out their fake field goal. We used to do that in high school. It was, you know.
Wait. Sorry. What are we talking about on a James Franklin fake field? We beat Penn State the last 2 years by like 40 points. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what does a fake field goal have anything to do with anything?
There are major momentum. There are major momentum plays in these games.
We're close. Like, if we're talking about like a fake field goal here and there, you need 24 points, 22 points to beat Michigan. This is not. We're not talking about 3 points here and there.
It all snowballs when OSU gets rolling early in these games. It would Michigan, the ghosts of the last 19 years would have crept, and the doubts would have crept into these Michigan players. If they didn't have the secret sauce and this code of confidence of knowing what plays were going to be called.
If all it took was $6,000 of tickets and an iPhone to be the best college football team in the country, who wouldn't freaking do this? It is not that. I mean, like, that is not what it takes to be the best college football team in the country.
Well, of course, you still have to have somewhat comparable talent. I'm not saying it would work for Bowling Green to, and they're having a decent year. Bowling Green to go out there and beat OSU.
Let's bring it back to what the question really was. I think Connor Stallions, he had a vast network, quote unquote, of like people that would go to these games. I think it came out of his pocket. I think he wanted to impress the coaching staff of his knowledge and his ability to sign seal. I think the Central Michigan game, I think he was hired by McElwain. I think McElwain saw that he was a talent at Michigan. And he said, come to help me with Michigan State. You're not playing that day. It's a Friday night game. Help me beat Michigan State. I think that was a Central Michigan funded deal. I don't think that was a Michigan coaching staff knew anything about it. I think Connor Stallions is trying to make his own side hustle on that. I think
you're really going with this lone gunman, isolated, mentally ill player.
The NCAA has come out and said they have zero evidence of it being anything else. So, like, until there's evidence of it being something else, I'm going to go with what the evidence says, which is Connor Stallions worked on his own. So, I mean, like,
yeah.
But how is the program's responsible? If you can just make sure that your cheaters are isolated and there's no paper trail to the top, then what? You're allowed to just get away with it.
How would there be no paper trail at the top in the digital age? Like, if this has to be shared somehow with the defensive coordinators and the offensive coordinators. The fact he's literally talking
to the offensive and defensive coordinators, has a whole binder and is telling them what to do on the sidelines that early in the game. After the play is,
he's able to whisper in the ear.
We're not talking about third and fourth quarter. He's had time to adjust.
It doesn't work that way. I feel like people who are in our position, of a very analytical position, think it's that simple to be able to like see it in real time and make the changes in real time and have the perfect thing drawn up against it. It doesn't work that way in reality. It's not an advantage.
Well, you have to prepare for the OSU. Like, it's not like you're going in blind. You know, like you said, they know OSU's tendencies. They know they've been preparing for OSU since the start of the year. And so then you add that little extra layer. I'm not saying Michigan was a bad team last year. You add that extra layer. It gives you, maybe it just gives you confidence, but it also allows you, a few key plays can completely change the way a whole game shifts. It's not the butterfly effect, but in a way that it can be that way. You can just sense when games start shifting and when you're expecting these things to work and a frustration starts to build and an exuberance starts to build on the other side. It's just, that is why these Big Ten coaches are so peeved about this.
So are you predicting an Ohio State victory this year in the Big House with on equal playing field, knowing that like Michigan can't steal your signs now, you guys have plenty of time to prepare. Are you predicting an Ohio State victory in Ann Arbor this year?
As long as in the next 2 weeks, there is not an injury, as long as Trevion Henderson is healthy. That's fair to say. we are a different team with a healthy Trevion Henderson. And so I think this is going to be a lot like the 07 game that was at Michigan, my freshman year of college, where we relied on Beanie Wells and we ushered Lloyd Carr out of town. And I think it's going to be a lower scoring game than this rivalry has seen since post JT Barrett OSU era. And we're going to have a Todd Beckman, Beanie Wells style, Kyle McCord, Trevion Henderson, plus Marvin Harrison type of battle. And I think OSU is going to come out on top this year.
We got to put the bet on the line.
Hold on. Stop. I need to stop. Today's OSU Michigan halftime report brought to you by Joby's. All natural bee pollen from bees in British Columbia. Vitamins, minerals, amino acids, proteins. It's food, not a chemical cooked up in a lab, just bee pollen in a vegetable capsule. Immune boost, energy boost, sleep better, vitality. It's not a miracle drug, so you got to give it a week or so. Two golden capsules either in the morning with breakfast or before bed. It'll fill in the gaps in your diet. Joby's, feel better, be better. And right now, Joe is offering a 6-month supply for only $99, and you get a 7-month free shipping, and a money back guarantee. You can call Joe himself, talk to him. He's happy to hear from you. And for a short time, if you use promo code FFP, you get an 8th month free. It's Joby's. Just listen to this listener testimony from Connor. Hi guys, big fan of the show. I have a tough job traveling around from state to state, sitting out in the cold and long nights, going over my work, detailed reports. The only thing that gets me through the day is two golden capsules. I wake up feeling refreshed, even if it's 4 hours sleep. Thank you for showing me this product. Good to hear from you, Connor. And like I said, you don't have to be a code cracker to use promo code FFP and get an 8th month free. It's Joby's. Joby's for you. Joby's for me. Joby's for
everyone. Take Joby's. Loser has to wear, you know.
All right, we're back right now. What would I be willing to risk?
What's the bet?
The thing is, like, so much is on so much so much is so much is on so much is on the line already that it's like, what type of bet could I have that would have make me care any differently about, like,
are you gonna put money on Michigan? Because he usually does put blood money on Michigan.
Yeah, I mean,
that's ridiculous. Bad fan.
I'm probably going to put my Astros winnings. Not my Astros, my Rangers winnings on Michigan. So $500 on Michigan.
Bad fan.
But I don't know. Maybe I have to wear like blue and yellow that Monday. The Monday after.
I think that's fair. You gotta wear Michigan colors, or he's gotta wear Buckeyes.
And my boss is a Michigan fan, so I might just double dip and make the same bet with
yeah,
for both of you guys.
I think the fair thing is actually for the remainder of the fantasy football season, your team name has to be Harbaugh's My Daddy.
No,
My Daddy.
I do not want to win a fantasy until the playoffs. I don't want that as my team name in the playoffs.
This is the rest of the season. Be confident. Are you confident or are you not confident that the signed ceiling is worth 21 points?
That's a great bet.
Harbaugh's My Daddy or Dave's My Daddy?
Shake on it.
I hate.
I mean, there's a chance you don't even make the playoffs anyways, Corman. So, like, let's, like, I'm in the playoffs. You might not make the playoffs. I think it's a safe bet for you.
I'm going to make the playoffs. I'm going to go farther than Paper Champ over here.
He's 8-1.
Yeah, but he's peaked too early. Yeah, I'll make a Harbaugh themed team name.
Oh, it's not a Harbaugh theme. It is Harbaugh is my daddy.
Let me think about the team name, but you'll have to approve of it.
What's the problem with accepting the terms as is?
It's a lot of words there. That's a long team name.
All right. The bet's going through. I'm going to force him to do it.
Okay.
Let's talk about punishment. And you might be surprised at what I think the punishment should be and what I think is fair. What I don't want, I don't want Harbaugh suspended from games this year. And I don't know that the Big Ten has the power. Maybe the Big Ten could rule Michigan's ineligible from the Big Ten championship game this year. That would be awkward. And it would be not helpful for the Big Ten would be turning over a lot of money. Because like you said, there's a decent chance both of these teams make the college football playoff. And then that's a double check for the conference.
I do not think both of these teams make the college football playoff. In any scenario, I don't think both teams make.
I think if OSU loses a close game to Michigan, then at Michigan loses a close game, like 3 points or so. If
Oregon beats Washington, Oregon's in. If Texas wins the Big 12, Texas would be in. There's zero chance they're going to let a non-conference champion, one-loss team in over a conference champion, one-loss team. So, I don't think two teams get in this year.
You're a little more confident in there not being. You're a little more confident than me that there's not going to be some more upsets
I don't think Texas loses out. I don't think FSU loses out. I think that's the problem. FSU doesn't really have a tough enough schedule ahead. Oregon, they play USC this weekend? I don't know. Washington plays USC this weekend. So I think Oregon is clean throughout.
And then Bama or Georgia's in.
A one loss. If Bama plays close against Georgia, they may have a better
chance. Even though I said there's a chance both teams make it, I actually think that Alabama is going to win the SEC. And so they're going, I think Alabama is better. Alabama has kind of found something. I think they're going to beat Georgia. Well, Georgia's had a very weak schedule. Now they play Ole Miss this weekend, but Georgia's schedule has been almost as bad as Michigan's this year. It's like 105th versus 111th toughest schedule in the country. What I think is a fair punishment for Michigan, Big Ten conference game, no suspension for Harbaugh, Big Ten, they are banned from this year's Big Ten conference game, but the NCAA could still put them in the college football playoff if they want, but they must redact, what's the word? Vacate the last 2 years of wins. Vacate all Connor Stallion wins. That's the main punishment.
They're not going to let Michigan not go to the Big Ten championship. That would be way too disturbing to media, to money. If Michigan beats Ohio State, it'll just be too disruptive to say they can't go to the Big Ten championship. That's not going to happen. Vacating the wins from the past two seasons, I don't think that is a actual punishment that should be had, but if it did, it doesn't matter. Everyone saw the domination. I think the public opinion is out there. The only people who are saying this is a big deal is Ohio State. I think it's out there. And I think if Michigan goes and beats Ohio State this year, everyone's really going to think.
I think Michigan State and Purdue and Penn State have called out Michigan more than OSU. OSU has officially refused to comment on the situation.
I'll concede that if Michigan did not steal Michigan State signs this year, it might have been 42-0 instead of 49-0. That is possible. So listen, you have my concession on that one. But also Penn State not close last year. None of these games are close. So we have to be saying these are 40-point games. That's how much sign stealing matters, and I don't think that's anyone believes that to be true.
Ryan Day better win this year, or he's the biggest crybaby in the history of the world.
When Ryan Day, there's been no proof that that was a Zach Smith lie about Ryan Day using his brother and brother-in-law to do these. There's been no proof that Ryan Day has done any crying or complaining about this.
So I mean, it is very well documented.
Kind of a crybaby.
It was very well documented that Day was very vocal in the Big Ten meeting. So he did some crying behind closed doors. And it's also like very well thought that Ohio State did not hire the PI firm of Ryan Day's brother, but he hired a PI firm that contracted Ryan Day's brother to do the work. So like, this is connected.
This Big Blue Anon stuff that your message boards have been creating with that Big Blue Insider. I can't even name an OSU message board, but this Big Blue Insider message board, that's just
11 Warriors, not your the thing that you've been posting all over the place in the Slack channel, 11 Warriors, not a blogger or blog post.
Well, but they're not as message boardy. They are like a content farm.
They're like, that's journalism in 11 Warriors happening over there.
And I like message boards. They're fun, but this is random poster that subscribes to Big Blue Insider, knowing a guy who knows a guy who like, and then these things get picked up by the Michigan media presence out there and running with it and treating it as fact.
Now, can I allow you to comment on the allegations that Ohio State and Rutgers conspired to give plays to Purdue for the Big Ten championship game?
I don't know if that happened or not, but
I don't know
if it was. It's
a stallion of advanced scouting or not.
No, if it wasn't, if it was obtained just by being on the sidelines and watching and sharing tendencies, coaches, it's all about networking. These coaches talk. They reach out to their friends. They say, "Hey, you played this team. What did you see? What were their strengths? What were their tendencies?" OSU did not have a video sign stealing operation, a military grade sign stealing operation. So yes, did Shianu and Ryan Day talk?
I'm questioning. Are you taking it seriously when you say that kind of stuff, like a military grade sign? So
yeah.
I'm actually wondering, like, are you egging me on or do you believe
that? No,
I can't figure it out.
Connor Stallions, I don't think we're just going to blame mental illness here. Bad guy with a gun, lone gunman type thing. This is the real deal.
I want to put you on the record here. Tell me, I just want a yes or no answer. I want to hear. iPhone video from randos at games is better than professional coaches sharing advanced scouting to other Big Ten schools. Like, you think the one that Connor Stallions did is a bigger advantage?
Well, the
professional coaches sharing their signs that they stole during the games, advanced scouting to other teams.
Yes. Because every team is talking and going over scouting reports with their contacts, with their network, but not everyone has this high tech operation.
I think that answers all that I need to know, Corbin. Like, it makes no difference. If coaches are sharing all the information for games it doesn't matter about the iPhone video, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't. So like, that's where this all falls apart. And you were wrong either way you answered the question. So I think that's like a great place to end, honestly. And we can move on to the next topic.
Yeah. I mean, they need, it's ridiculous. They don't have radios in the helmet. We all know that. And we're going to get it next year. So
it's unbelievable. We got a moderator here that just comes in with already locked in his ways of believing that sign stealing is a joke and is a bunch of do about nothing.
I definitely think it's a joke. It's just football out there. It's war on the field, off the field. And, you know, losers that like to cry, I'm not going to stick up for it. I say you go beat them.
That's like saying, well, you still had to hit the ball, like during the Astros cheating operation. Like,
the Astros thing's stupid too.
I don't think so. I think that's worse. But if you have that advantage of knowing when a curveball is coming versus not, I mean, that's huge. Yes, you still have to hit the ball, but we're talking about good teams playing good teams. And that is enough of an advantage to give that edge.
Well, the Astros have clearly won enough since, and I don't know.
They haven't been as dominant.
Been pretty good. Seven ALCSs in a row, and Let's move on. Ekmanity, are you worried about Penn State at all?
No.
Now, it doesn't matter, because even if you lose to them and you beat Ohio State, you're in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, and also, by the way, like, the Penn State-Ohio State game told me all I need to know about these two teams. They're both pathetic on offense. Like, I do believe that both teams have a good defense. Like, I will not, downgrade their defense, but their offenses are both anemic. And, if it wasn't for Marvin Harrison, Ohio State would not have been able to move the ball at all.
Well, we didn't have Trevian Henderson that game.
Try to run the ball on Michigan. I will welcome that outcome. I would just say, don't go to Harrison, try to run the ball. Like, I will take that matchup all game. But, I am not worried about Penn State. Happy Valley is, a scary place to play. That's probably my biggest concern. Not the Penn State football team, but, just being in Happy Valley with the crowd and, you get off to a slow start. But, Penn State overall, if we score 14 points, I might think that's enough to win the game.
That's a noon start, which the Big Ten's got to do more big night games. It's a joke, man.
It's a noon start. Damn.
Yeah, big noon kickoff. Ooh. Yeah, you got to get to those night games. It's the best. All right, we're going to rank our top five college QBs for the draft this year. Let's go with Corman first. I want him in order 5-1. No, actually, let's go 1-5, like you're drafted in the NFL draft.
So, and I used because to hate
one,
and I,
one is not as clear as it was a month ago, I don't think.
And I used to hate this guy. Well, not hate. I didn't think he was a good player. I used to kind of rip on him. I'm gonna go with Bo Nix at 5.
At 5. Okay, you're at 5. I was like, one overall. Okay.
Oh no. I'm gonna go.
No, that's fine. Go that way.
Bo Nix at 5. And this is, you said this for NFL, right? Yeah, this is for NFL prospects.
A great draft.
At number 4. Well, he doesn't have the flow anymore, and I don't know. I'm a little worried about his durability. I'm gonna go with Quinn Ewers.
Maybe the most live arm minus Caleb.
Yeah. The arm,
I'm shocked by that.
Strong arm, the things he can do with the ball, but I'm a little worried Justin Herbert's kind of been good, but his throwing of the ball kind of reminds me of Justin Herbert, where it's a real flat throw. And I think Justin Herbert hasn't
seen a lot from him. Now, he's playing this week, I saw, but his ceiling's certainly high, I think.
Number 3, maybe I'm buying into the hype. I'm going to go with Drake May at 3.
Oh, at 3? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's just, is he Mitch Trubisky? I think it's just seeing him in the powder blue. I don't know. Maybe I'm biased.
Right.
At number 2, Big Penix Energy.
Okay.
It's crazy. I mean, he would always make plays, and he made Indiana scary a little bit when he was with Indiana. But I'm liking what I'm seeing. But maybe some people have dropped him down a little bit in the rankings, but I think it's still, to me, whether I don't mind that he was crying after the game. It's Caleb Williams number 1. It's just the catch, and maybe it's that USC uniform and the ball that they use, because college football, there's a little more variance from school to school in the ball. But just the ball, it's not the tightest spiral, but it's just the RPM just seems perfect. It just seems so catchable, how he can sometimes have that Aaron Rodgers quick release while still backing up. And
yeah, he can flip that wrist.
There's some Aaron Rodgers. There's some Andrew Luck. There's some Patrick Mahomes, although Mahomes isn't as mobile as he used to be. Not that he's ever been a runner, but that mobility where then you're still throwing the ball. I love what I see from Caleb Williams. Nothing about this season has made me like him any less. His defense, they just fired Alex Grinch, but just put him in a tough spot. I think he forced the ball knowing he had to try and score every drive. And so Caleb Williams still the number one overall. I would take him over many of the quarterbacks in the NFL that are considered good quarterbacks. Yeah, like if I was starting a franchise, like we're right there at that. Would I take Joe Burrow or Caleb Williams?
Hot takes.
I mean, Joe Burrow is like already pretty old and body's starting to break down. So I think I go with Caleb Williams right there. And I probably take Caleb now. CJ Stroud has looked great. I take him over CJ Stroud. I think I probably have Burrow, Stroud, Williams, one above Burrow.
Yeah. Love it. All right, Eknani, give me your five.
I got Bo Nix at number five. Super quick release. Think he's going to be successful in the NFL. He's started so much in college football. I think he's going to be able to step in the NFL and actually like be pretty productive right off the bat. Two, I have Michael Penix. Probably like a better arm talent, a little bit more mobile. I have questions. I saw him play at Indiana. You know what I mean? Like it's just when he gets pressure, it's not good. He's had some bad games at Washington, but like his ceiling is high. His floor might be a little lower than Nick's. So that's my concerns there. Then I'm going to go Drake May. And honestly, this is not after a lot of watching Drake May. It's a lot of hearing about Drake May. Everyone seems really high on him. So that's what concerns me. I haven't watched him play a lot, and UNC is not a powerhouse. It's playing a lot of talent all the time, but we'll keep it there. And then second, Caleb Williams, like mobile, good arm talent, got a lot of upside there. Like now I think he's taking a lot of hits this year at USC. Offensive line's not that great. He's running around a ton, trying to win games by, you know, trying to get put up 50 points, like get hit out of the pocket. Like I worry about that going into the NFL. And then number one, which is completely left off of Corman's list, JJ McCormick.
Are you on drugs?
I mean, I don't think Corman's watched a lot of Michigan football. JJ hasn't played a fourth quarter all season. He actually played his first against Purdue. And that's mostly just a warm-up to play Penn State. I mean, we played an entire season not playing the guy in the third quarter. The kid is absolutely electric when he gets pressure in his face. He's actually, like, on third down, he's an 80% completion quarterback on third down. His yards per attempt is 10 yards per attempt. I mean, like, We are talking an elite level quarterback that Michigan doesn't even have to rely on because their run game is so good. And I think that's why people aren't talking about him. You got Michael Penix, you got Drake May, you got Caleb Williams that rely on putting up tons of points every game because their defense are stinky. Michigan's defense is great. You don't have to put a ton of pressure on this guy to put a ton of yards up. When his like back's against the wall, he will. So like I actually think like that's the overlooking thing that's happening with Michigan right now. Everyone's like, you know, taking these teams and running them to death. That was last year. This year, JJ's carrying the day. I mean, the guy's electric. So, like, he is Tom Brady 2.0, but more mobile. I mean, he's a great pocket passer. He's a great, like, mobile passer. I mean, there's no doubt. He was the Heisman favorite last week. I don't know. Like, this week he's not. But, like, after Penn State and Ohio State, he'll be the clear number one. He's my prediction to win the Heisman.
That could happen, but this to put him over Caleb Williams, this shows the level of delusion that you have and the seriousness at which the rest of your arguments today should be taken.
I mean, I put my comments on Caleb Williams out there. Like, I think he's going to get banged up by
this
year.
This must have been one hell of a work happy hour that you were at.
It was good, but I think he's going to get banged up before the end of the year. I think that's going to hurt draft stock, so.
All right, here's my five real quick. I have JJ at five. I love his size, 6'3". I'm always about that. And I also like that Harbaugh is his coach, NFL coach. They run a pro-style offense for the most part, which most of these guys don't. So I like that. I got Penix at four. He's also 6'3", even though he can move. I like that size. The one guy you guys don't have that I have at three is Jaden Daniels. I just saw him live. He actually has the best QBR in college football, believe it or not, even though he's seen as a runner. Size is a worry. He got knocked out of that game by, you know, a pretty big hit. So that's a worry. But, and then I also, you got to like Brian Kelly's coaching. I'm NFL style, you know, offensive mind. I got Drake May too. He's 6'4". Love that. And then Caleb, the highest ceiling I got on one. So we were pretty close. I don't like Bo Nix as much as you guys, but man, if you can get Bo Nix in the second round, I'd be ecstatic. Or even the Florida State kid. I mean, it's the deepest quarterback draft I've probably ever seen. I mean, there's like eight of them you could take. Even that kid from Washington State, Cam Ward's, I mean, you get him in round late, round two, three, who knows?
I mean, maybe JJ comes back for another season, you know, and he just waits till next year when it's not so deep, so.
Yeah, I mean, you and me didn't even mention Quinn Ewers. I need to see more of him. I think Quinn Ewers actually should come back. I think Jaden Daniels should probably come back, too, even though I got him three. The rest of them are probably ready to go.
I think Quinn Ewers has some work to do.
Yeah. But his ceiling, I mean, he's got the arm deep ball is maybe the best, even above Caleb, maybe. All right. I also asked you guys, let's get our five college football jobs that are the best. You know, that's kind of a generic term. I kind of weighed job safety, you know, like some of these, you know, crazy fans. I weighed some of that. I weighed where do I want to live, who wins, what easiest to recruit. So I'll start since we started with Corman, then we'll go McNamee, then Corman. So at five, I have a tie, Ohio State/Michigan. I think they're both great jobs. Fans are crazy, but not like Auburn crazy. Like, fairly reasonably crazy. You know, both good places to live, I think. Easy to recruit. Michigan, you do have to recruit with somewhat of grades matters. I think that's tough, but I think they're both great jobs. I have four. I have Notre Dame. The only reason I have a nod over those two, I think if you've ever been there, which I know, McMahon, you have, I think the aura of it is just really cool. And I'm not even a Notre Dame fan. I just think it's awesome, like, to be walking those halls. I think it is tough to recruit there. South Bend's not an amazing town. It is close to Chicago, which is a perk, but I got them four. Three, I have Georgia. I know that maybe that's a little easy because they finally got humming, but I think Athens is pretty good to live in for an SEC town, which the SEC, you know, all the towns aren't necessarily great. Tuscaloosa's kind of average, or actually bad. It's close to Atlanta, so you get the airport. Georgia is maybe the best high school football state right now, so I just think now that they're humming, I think they're going to be humming for a while. Two, I have Texas. They've been down, but Austin's an awesome place to live, so I think that helps. The burnt orange is sweet. Like, I just, to be the king of Texas, be the best, you'd be super important. Whereas, like, even Ohio State and Michigan, I know they're the biggest things in the state, but, like, there are still NFL teams close. I guess the Cowboys aren't that far, but, like, the Buckeyes are not the biggest thing in Cleveland, even though they're big. The Browns are still bigger, believe it or not. And then number one, I have LSU. I think all the last three coaches they've had are all won national titles. I think that matters. Whereas, like, Ohio State, Urban and Jim did, but the guy before him didn't. Michigan, not every coach has won a national title. I think I think Brian Kelly will get a national title at some point. The fans are a little crazy, but in a fun way, I think, you know, just drunk and having fun. But so those are my top five. Let's hear yours, like, Manny.
Pause.
All right.
And we're back.
It's been a good time.
All right, Manny, what are your top five college jobs you want?
Do I start at five or start at one?
Start at five.
Starting at five, like, I kind of grew up hating them, but I would honestly love the job, USC. Living in L.A., like, you got the Hollywood glamour there. I mean, if you win there, your God's there. You got, like, Tribute to Troy fight on, the whole thing. Like, I think it's a pretty sweet place to win and play.
It's just off my list.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see after the realignment, but, like, in the Pac-12, like, it was actually, like, kind of easy to be a big deal in the Pac-12. You could have a big season, even if you lose to the one or two big teams there. So, that's number five. Four is Texas. A lot of the same things you said, like, you know, burnt orange, like, biggest thing in the whole state. Like, you're the big dog there. Austin's a sweet, like, a great town. Good job. By the way, I excluded the SEC overall on my list. Just spoiler alert. I think, like, SEC is too challenging. Like, you do a good job there, you lose one game, everyone hates you. So, like, that's just, like, you have a short-term life as a coach in one of those places.
Fair take.
Three is Notre Dame. Like, the aura of Notre Dame, the tradition, all of the above, like, you know, great stuff at Notre Dame. You're also, like, you get to build your schedule how you want it for the most part. You play some ACC stuff, like, pretty easy to stay relevant. if you're looking for some like easy schedules here, just continue to be the big dog here. Number two, Oregon, great place to live. You got Nike just feeding money into your program. You're able to recruit no problem. You got the greatest facilities. You got, you know, all the great gear, the uniforms, everything that's flashy for these kids living in the Northwest. So, and I mean, like, it's, again, it's the Pac-12. Like, how hard is it to be a powerhouse there? So that's pretty good. And number one, I mean, Michigan, you know, you got the tradition. You got Ann Arbor, number one winningest program in college football history, most national championships, yada, yada, yada. Just like, is there a better place to be? And also, I will say, a lot of the fan base, academics, you know what I mean? So, like, they're intelligent football fans. It's not like being a head coach at Ohio State and having to deal with a bunch of Walmart Ohio State fans, you know, who are just, like, you know, just rampaging at the screen during the Rutgers game, saying the offense isn't good enough. We're saying that we're the best team in the country. You know, like, it's just really hard to follow. If you're an Ohio State coach from Michigan, like, you're academics, you know what you're dealing with from a fan base. So, definitely that's the number one place to be.
Hey. K-Man.
Michigan likes to – they people like Ekmanity were – where were they the last 19 years before the previous two? Like, so, like Michigan State's truly – they just – you just never even heard from them. They just disappeared. Now they're back, crawling out of the woodwork. Number five, I went back and forth. I scribbled off some teams. Trying to think about it. There's, like you said, there's different ways you can take this question. Is it livability? Is it the pressure you feel from the fans? Is that a positive? Is that a negative? So I kind of mixed and matched a little bit at five. You'll laugh at this one. Cause I had crossed off Georgia. I agreed, like, all the high school talent down there and Athens, very livable. But speaking of livability, number five, I'm going with Hawaii. University of Hawaii. If there's a lot of schools out there that I would say are tied for fifth, like, why would you say LSU over Georgia or Texas over Oklahoma? Or you could, maybe not Oklahoma, it's Norman, but Texas over Oregon, these types of debates. But Hawaii, you're getting paid and put up in a house to live in Hawaii. You get to watch, you get, it's just, there's not a lot of pressure. You're truly living that Hawaiian life, but you're still getting to be a college football coach. And Hawaii was relevant for a brief period when we were in, like, high school and college. Number four, talk about the pressure. I did put Alabama at four. It's just, they are Alabama, most national titles, second or first in winning percentage, take post-World War II. I think they're number one in wins. But you got to put up with the crazies. You got to put up with Roll Tide Willie. You got to put up with Harvey Updike. You got to put up with Phyllis. You got to put up with Feinbaum, but
Nick Saban already has a statue out front, like, and he's still alive. So, like, the flip side is, if you win, you're a god. Yeah.
To show that I truly am fair and balanced, unlike Rush Limbaugh over here, I'm putting Michigan number three. One of the iconic football programs after, with. Now, they haven't won really anything of recent. They have that shared national title in 97, but, like, really dominated when Babe Ruth was playing for the Yankees. But, I mean, that stadium, I know it's not as loud as other stadiums. Ekmanity called them a wine and cheese crowd, but it's still the big house, still the tradition, still one of the best fight songs, maybe number one, maybe number two. So Michigan number three. Number two is kind of that combo of football, tradition, powerhouse, plus livability. I'm going USC number two. You got the fight song. You got LA, the sunshine, Southern California recruiting. Now they're in the Big Ten. We'll see how that is. That makes it more difficult with the travel. But the song girls, you got to go USC number two. And number one, of course, I'm going with Ohio State. Not just being a homer here, but one of the biggest traditions in college football. And they have the state to themselves, one of the best high school football states. While we're not recruiting it as hard as we used to under Tressel, and Michigan gets plenty. There's plenty of players to go around, though. Michigan a lot of times has more Ohio players. Sometimes it seems like they have more Ohio players than Michigan players. When you don't have that in-state challenge for recruiting, for eyeballs, maybe the largest fan base in America, maybe one of the largest fan bases of all sports in the world, but maybe slightly less rabid than Alabama or Texas or Texas A&M fan. I'm going to go with OSU number one. Sure, a little bit of homerism there, but.
Right, it's your dream job. Yeah, I left off USC close. I think Tennessee was close for me, but their fans are nutty. The tradition there, the fight song, the orange, I love all that. A&M fans are nuts. I debated Miami and get to live in Miami, but like that stadium sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I debated Oregon for the Nike reasons. Washington, that stadium's beautiful. Get to live in Seattle, but the Seahawks are down the road.
I thought about Ole Miss, like not a ton of expectations there, but great tradition, SEC, like, you know.
Yeah.
True Southern school, could be a fun place to go.
Yeah, I mean, Lane seems pretty safe there, just winning 8-9 game the year. You know, another one I debated was Nebraska. Now, their fans are insane, and I think it's going to be hard to win. But if you would get them back, you'd be a god.
Like, they're like a supportive insane.
Yeah.
They support you. Even if you lose 5 games, they still, like, they're cheering for you.
Incredible yeah. Fan base. I think it's just hard to get recruits to want to go to Lincoln at this point. So, like, good luck. We kind of talked about it earlier with the Tuscaloosa thing. I can't believe that Saban just turned that, because they went through the starting lineup and there was one starter from Alabama. Like, I know Alabama has pretty good, like, recruits these days down lineman guys, but there's one playing this year. And he's got all these kids coming. Their tight end was from Scranton, and, like, it's a town's a dump. But you just walk in that building, I think, you see Bear Bryant, you see Saban, and you see him singing, and you're like, I'm coming here. So it's pretty incredible, because in my head it's like, if I'm a number one recruit, I'm going to USC or Texas. Like, those are two best towns I've ever seen. Or you know another school that's solid? Like Arizona State. Now, it is an NFL town, but like Scottsdale is sweet.
Yeah.
The weather, the ladies, like
girls. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's an underrated job if they could get good.
Yeah.
All right, let's go through some fantasy real quick, then we'll wrap this up. The first thing I want to say is Marta. He's 2-7. He started 2-0. He's lost 7 in a row. He's only made 6 moves this season. Is he checked out?
He's checked out. And I think he's kind of admitted. He says he can't win. But you're supposed to keep trying. I mean, I came in last year. I was still trying to make moves. You've come in last before, Steve. You're making moves. You're trying to scratch and claw. I mean, yeah. I feel like after his podcast, when he was on this pod, he's just kind of disappeared. Who knows if he's still alive, but I just look at his team, and I mean, Herbert's kind of underperformed, Garrett Wilson, some bad luck, but he's not been bad, but he rolls out Pickens every week in the starting lineup as if Pickens has earned that. James Cook has really fallen off. Derrick Henry has kind of righted the ship, but Kyle Pitts, JSN, Kareem Hunt, Jerry Jeudy on the roster, like it looked like Marta was going to be fully dependent on Devon Achane getting 40 points a week. Like that wasn't going to be sustainable either. If he comes back, he'll get it some points, and it'll knock Ekmanity down a little bit with his Mostert reliance. But I mean, he right now, Jason Sanders on a bye is in his kicking spot, and he has 2 defenses, and it's not like Jason Sanders is a must-keep kicker through a bye week. Like, they don't kick field goals that often in Miami. They score touchdowns. I don't understand what he's doing with his roster. It's just it's a bad team. Well, it's not the worst team in the league that we've seen, but it's just a very poor managed team that has some good parts that he's just letting squander, and he's probably going to win. He'll win one more game probably at some point. Some of these guys can have big weeks. But
I'm high on JSN, but in another league, I haven't started him all season. Like, he's not reliable. Yeah. What about McManny? Why are you not a paper champ? Tell us why you're built for the long haul.
So, first of all, I kind of do believe I'm a paper champ. Like, it was like I told, I think, like, every year the tradition Garber and I have after the draft, he sends me a text, says, how you think your team is? And every year I say, I should, you know, go, like, I should win 8 games or whatever, and I'll make the playoffs, but I don't expect to go very far. I say the same thing every year. I think my team this year is truly an example of just, you know, a true team effort, like a true Michigan of, like, everyone's contributing to the win. I don't rely on a single person. I think Gorman is claiming that I rely on Mostert. I don't. It's generally a different person steps up every week. I have ETN. He could have a big week. Mostert could have a big week. I could have Allen have a big week. Ayuk could have a big week. I have many people that can go off, but I have many people. Basically, my team's floor is the highest. And I rely on my team's floor being high. I don't depend on my team's ceiling being high. I think the ceiling being high is what you need to win a championship. I think a floor being high is what you need to be a high-seeded playoff team. I think I'm a high-seeded playoff team. So, I'm just calling it out like it is. Like, if things fall in my favor in the playoffs, I'll win. But my floor is high. If I go up against someone who just, hits their 140 week, I'm probably out.
Yeah. I can agree with that. I think that's kind of – you're kind of agreeing with my assessment, because I mentioned ETN. I think your floor, when you put it that way, one of those guys is probably going to go off each week, and it keeps your floor somewhat high, but the chance of them all going off is pretty slim. But I still, maybe ETN will keep this up. ETN has just been insane this year, and along with Mostert, and I think those two are really buoying you.
It's like coming down to my drafting strategy every year. Like, I don't go for the boom ever. Like, I just kind of go for, like, I'm going to spend the average amount on average players and, like, just get a bunch of, like, very decent players. So, like, to the point of, like, why is Ekmanity in the playoffs every year? It's because that's my strategy. I never go for the boom guys. But, like, it also, like, lowered, like, the championship I've only won 1 year. It's because, like, the dominoes never fell 1 year. So, like, there's kind of, like, a shooter's going to shoot thing. And, like, if I'm just looking at Marta's lineup, right, it's, like, I can understand why he hasn't dropped guys, right? But there's also the shooter's going to shoot mentality of, like, I'm picking up someone who I think is actually going to, like, try to change my season. He's trying to, like, get to 500. So that's my take on Marta.
I feel like I tried that strategy of yours last year. It was my worst team ever. Just getting a lot of solid guys and then just no ceiling. I think Tyler
is the best team.
I think Nat has the best roster right now, but I don't know that he has enough runway left to take off.
Tyler's Thielen has been the 34th best player. Like,
but is that sustainable? I mean, I haven't seen him do much. I haven't been paying that close attention, but
he's got 5 points right now.
And the game's almost over. Like, I look at Nat's team, and don't let him. He probably won't make it this far into the podcast, so I'm probably safe to talk about it. But minus his quarterback issues, I mean, you have Olave, Dante Adams, AJ Brown, Kenneth Walker, Jonathan Taylor, David Montgomery when I think he's back this week, Aaron Jones. Like, this team is deep and has depth at both wide receiver and running back. He still has a ton of running back depth, and he traded away half of them. I didn't even mention Amari Cooper. Like, Nat's team is, I think, now will he pick the right players each week? It's kind of a lineup setting hell, but if everyone's doing good, even your bench, then it doesn't matter. I don't know that he has enough at quarterback. I think he really screwed up when I was feeling a little more desperate and was maybe willing to trade him Hurts for Montgomery and Purdy, and he wouldn't throw in Purdy. Literally thought Purdy and Hurts were the same guy. And
he's got a pretty nice start to the week with Garber only getting 5 out of Hubbard so far.
I think Garber's going to sink like a stone.
You're only projected for 85 points this week.
I mean, Hurts
chalking up a loss.
Hurts and Kelce on bye.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping Kyler comes back and throwing it at tight end McBride, and hopefully Russell Wilson has something on Monday night against the Bills, who I think their defense is not what it's – I don't think their defense is very good. And I think now I have Javonte Williams and Russell. If they can just score points against the Bills, I'm going to be getting them somehow. And Hanks is beatable, though. I'm facing Hanks, so I think I can still win.
Hanks is the most luck right now. It's, like, unbelievable. This Louisville versus Virginia game has been incredible, which Louisville just took the lead back.
That's what I have on right now.
Is if Louisville beats Florida State, do they deserve to be in the playoffs?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, like, why not, right?
I think it depends. So, like, if you have an undefeated Big Ten team, undefeated SEC team, you have an Oregon team, a one-loss Oregon team, a one-loss Louisville team, a one-loss Texas team. I say they don't get it.
Okay. Yeah. But they do if, like, they need Jordan. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. They won't get in over Texas or Oregon. And then if Washington goes undefeated, they're in. If Texas loses, they'll go in over any Big 12 school.
And if Bama beats Georgia and they both just have one loss, they're both in for sure. Like, not that's not even a debate. So
I think a one-loss Georgia team should be shunned.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
If they lose to Bama.
One-loss Michigan or a one-loss Ohio State team should be shunned as well.
I'll tell you this, saving benching Milroe like 4 weeks ago, that's one of his worst, like, that was.
Or is that what woke Milroe up?
Maybe it's the genius of the guy. I don't know. All right, so who's gonna win? Who's gonna win Champions League, Ekman, since you haven't been on here?
I mean, probably Tyler.
Another Tyler title. All right. Anything else?
No, I mean, like, just stay tuned on the CFB Discord channel this weekend when Michigan just dominates Penn State. My takes are in there about, like, how much better we look than Ohio State did against Penn State when we're in Happy Valley.
Won't be hard to do that. What about tell me about Penn State. What was I going to say? Shoot. I forget now. All right.
It's late. It's been a long pod. I hope you guys have your. I hope you listening have your coffee, and have enjoyed this show.
All right, guys, appreciate it.
All right, have a good one.
All right. What beer do we have today for us, Corman?
Oh, don't do this.
It's in his mug.
Corman put you up for this.
Windless!
I will murder your mother.
If you had 3 seconds when the bartender comes to you, what beer do you
want? Hey, all right.
Bush Light or Bud Light? What do you think?
Beer Law of 1613.
Been waiting a season and a half to make my appearance, and this is what I get.
We have 9 different Oktoberfest beers.
6 of the beers are
pounded. Oh,
Seattle's my favorite bar scene.
Drunk. I'm not saying it. People are saying it.
Is that 6 yet?
No, there's no way that guy doesn't get
We like a good beer.
The radio's very good.
I even like the weirdos.
Okay, count the beers. 2.5 shots.
Hey, we've had 57 beers.
Yeah.
What? I don't even have a sister.
Priceless.
Oh.
Priceless.
Oh.
That's what we're doing.
Bartoberfest.
61 beers
we
across
also had roofies on
it. You dumbass.
Francis farted on the
no,
podcast.
No, no.
Find out what the hell is going on.
Killed the Jaeger dog with a shot.
Collusion, delusion.
So get him out. Rebel danger.
We did it once.
But like, wait.
You can drink it a little faster than
an
October.
He's not even going.
You're my sweet, sweet. He's shirtless, he's on the floor. The dude's curled up next to a refrigerator, for God's sakes.
Just kind of a bloated corpse of his old self.
Corbin is laying on the ground.